Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air. Happy Wednesday. How are you guys? How are you, Dan?
I hope you guys are good. I'm doing great today. I feel like I've been on the verge of getting sick for 2 weeks, but it's never happened. I'm pushing through and I feel good. How do you feel, and where are you?
I am in Hamburg. So I arrived yesterday via Zurich. Hamburg is my favorite German city because I think it just feels more
not German.
Beautiful,
is that what
serene?
You're
yeah,
to say?
I think it just feels less corporate, more charming, exactly. And so I really enjoy coming to Hamburg. Hamburg, of course, this week also has the Aircraft Interiors Expo AIX, which is one of the largest, most prominent events of the industry calendar, and ultimately where so many events focus on the outside of the aircraft, such as the aircraft itself. This gathering is everything to do with interiors, to do with the aircraft and how airlines come together to ultimately start designing what we then see around 5-6 years later as their new business, their new economy, their new premium, and so on and so on. So it's really good to reconnect with everyone in the industry. And yeah, I enjoy this gathering here in Hamburg.
That's good. Do you get the paper invitations from them? Because it's funny you're saying this, literally in front of me on my desk. I'm at my mom's house. Like they still send paper invitations from AIX to my mom's house since I was in high school. So it's like the Senate of the Free and Hanseatic City of Hamburg requests the pleasure of the company.
Yes.
Of me. I love it.
I do still receive those, luckily. It is very nice. It was always a novelty. I mean, I don't have it because God knows where it goes to. I think it even goes to an old address, but somehow after a couple of months, it makes its way there. And it's this, it's like beautiful, written in italics, kind of a very calligraphy style request of our presence by the local government here.
Yeah.
It's extra, but I like the tradition. I respect the tradition.
Nice. So tell me about your flights going to Hamburg yesterday.
So there's so many different ways to get from Doha, for example, to Hamburg. Of course, it's not direct, not until July, where QR will be launching direct flights to Hamburg. So how would you do it? because then I'll take you through my thought process as to how I came up with my routing.
Yeah. Well, from Doha to Hamburg, first I would check where could I fly Q-Suite. I'm also kind of turning into a SkyTeam frequent flyer in a sense. I have KLM status now, so I'd probably check to go through Amsterdam, maybe Paris, but CDG is really a nightmare.
Not for transit.
But I mean, definitely QR. You wouldn't want to be Turkish, I guess you could do and do one stop in Istanbul.
So Turkish was the fastest way here. Turkish was definitely the fastest way here when you kind of looked at it through duration. But Frankfurt and Munich would have required me to do the overnight. So to leave Doha about 1:20 in the morning, that kind of overnight bank and arrive into Europe pre-sunrise. And
not
then,
in the summer, not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore, I guess. And but I didn't need to be here that early. And also, I feel like that just triggers you to be tired for the next couple of days as a result. Even if you had a bed, even if you were able to sleep in a Q-suite, for example, it's just the whole being awake that late. And also, that's a short night flight. And, you know, they commence the descent around an hour before. Yeah. So there's very little sleeping time. So, okay, they were out the picture. Then I looked at the Munich daytime option in the morning. So that was on the cards. There was a Dusseldorf departure as well in the morning. Could have done that. But I just don't really enjoy connecting in Germany. As you know, I tried to avoid Frankfurt. Munich is not bad. It's okay. I've never connected at Dusseldorf, and I thought I'm not going to try it on this one now with such short notice. I'll do that another time. So then that takes me... I don't know about you. I open a map in these scenarios. Before I even get Google Flights to suggest me the connections, I'm thinking, okay, strategically, where are the hubs that have a decent departure time and also geographically are the closest? So, you know, there's very little difference in it between, for example, Munich and Hamburg. Looked at the northern side of things, decent connections from Helsinki, but just too far in terms of the second flight. So I was like, okay. I've spoken as recently as last week, my connections through Zurich. I like Zurich to connect through as a European hub. And so I went for Zurich, and that would mean that I would arrive into Zurich at 2 PM, assuming everything was on time, which thankfully it was. And then the connection would be 2.5 hours later. So more than comfortable with Swiss. Interestingly, of course, because it has to be two separate tickets, as QR does not have a commercial relationship with Swiss, I would need to, of course, exit into Switzerland, go upstairs and check in the bag again for the second flight. When I arrived to the Al Safwa check-in at Doha, the team said to me, that he did a few phone calls as I was checking in, and he said, okay, we've spoken to Zurich and we will check your bag directly through to Hamburg. And so that way, you just need to get your boarding pass online and then you don't need to do that. It was a very nice gesture and I politely declined. I said, no, I don't want to risk that because you're not going to be there, basically, was my justification. And I just pictured a scenario where I approach a Swiss desk and say, Qatar Airways checked it straight through. And she's like, we don't have a relationship with Qatar Airways. Well, you know, like just nobody knowing anything about it in Swiss. So I said to him, it's really nice, but no, I've got, you know, the aircraft's going to leave on time. I've got plenty of time in terms of 2 hours, 20 minutes. So it was nice and quick, straight off through immigration. And it's always funny. I just always think, and again, you know, the UK did this to themselves, didn't they? And of course, mostly I'm traveling on a UK passport and I'm about to enter Switzerland and I'm at immigration. And she says to me, she said, why are you here? You know, just the language barrier is like, that's not the most polite way to ask. Why are you here? I said, for transit. She said, and so where are you going? I said, to Hamburg. What are you doing in Hamburg? And she's looking at me completely stern. I said, I'm going for work. Also, she's in Switzerland. Like, why is she worried about what I'm doing in Germany? Yeah. And then suddenly she broke into the nicest smile after literally being this aggressive, you know, stern. She said, then you should enjoy your work in Hamburg. Have a nice day. I think maybe she's thinking, oh, he's no threat to us. He's leaving in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so straight upstairs. And then it's just these things. It's that ick, isn't it, of the things that bother us in Europe. For
example, escalators not working.
Yeah, of course the escalators didn't work. right? So that's the first thing. And there was scaffolding on the other ones. Everyone's funneling through on one escalator, and you've come off of the train that takes you from E to A and B. And so that took a bit of a while. And then I get to the business class check-in at Swiss, right? There is a huge zigzag, empty. Nobody's there. So great, there's no passengers in the queue. Guess what? There also is no agents on the desks, right? Except one. So I'm go through the zigzag because I can't, you know, go around it. I'm like having forced into this left, right, left, right, left, right. Yeah. Get to the front, and then there's a lady and she's sitting alone. I'm like, wonderful. I mean, it looks a bit odd that there are 35 business class desks and you're alone, but cool, you're available. As I approach her, of course she says to me, excuse me, I'm busy. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not. I was like, and she would have
she would have yelled at you if you had not done the zigzag and would have tried to cut through. But she's busy.
Yeah, I just wouldn't risk
help.
It.
Yeah.
She's like, excuse me, I'm busy. If you can just, I said to her, oh, you're not available. Like it says in the screen above you, it says check-in open above you. You're not available to do the check-in with. And she said to me, no. I said, oh, okay. Shall I head back and stand at the beginning of this empty queue? Or would you like to redirect me to a colleague perhaps or something? She said, you can go back and stand there. So I stood there. So she's the only agent. So I'm standing there. 1 minute, 5 minutes, 7 minutes. Okay. Oh, then I'm joined in the queue behind me by these two lovely British ladies that were going to London and two Japanese guys going to Japan. And they're looking at the woman and wondering, and I'm having to tell them, yeah, she told me not to approach her. Because they're thinking, hey, Alex, move, go. She's there, yeah. You know? I said, oh, she told me not to approach. So they're like, oh, so the Brits behind me are asking, she was like, we're quite late. So where do we?
Yeah.
I said, yep. Also, I'm in a connection. And so then I tried to get her eye contact. She would not look up. So then I walked back over to her and I said to her, is there a colleague that we can check in with? Because there's now a bit of a queue and everyone's kind of wondering. And she said to me, give me a passport. I'm like, right. Okay. So I assume I'm now checking in. And in those scenarios, I'm thinking, oh God, she's going to take this out on my back.
Yeah.
Oh God. So she, I gave her the passport. Anyway, the only interaction she had, which was absolutely weird and a bit of a weird thing that would have got your hopes up like it got mine. She said to me, the aircraft is 121. Are you okay in the middle too?
Huh?
I was like, that was my exact reaction. I was like, huh? She said, the seating in the cabin, she said, is 121. You want the one or you want the two? I said to her, well, the one. I said, is it not an A321?
Yeah.
She just ignored me. And then I said to her, excuse me, what aircraft is operating it? She said, I don't know. I said, okay. So then I was like, what is, have I been, like, are they, is Swiss putting on like
are they
an A330?
You? Oh no.
Yeah. But even the A330 is not 121, is it? Because there are some seats that are two.
Yeah.
So are we operated by some cool long-haul aircraft? Am I getting a bed to Hamburg for 50 minutes? Anyway, she goes, I said to her, so? She said to me, it's one seat by the window, she said, one seat by the aisle, another seat by the aisle, and one seat by the window. She
Great.
Said, it's a 321. I said to her, so it's 2-2.
Yeah.
Not 1-2-1. Anyway, I didn't say that. I just said to her, oh, good. Like that was
I'm so great. Excited.
That's exactly what I wanted. Thank you for that. Anyway, fine. Took the boarding pass and everything. I thought, oh, has it got me this way? Anyway, then after that, everything was fine and pleasant and smooth. Bumped into a friend actually in transit, which was nice. And then I proceeded to board. Oh my God, why people hate aviation. Seriously, people hate aviation for something that I had seen. I watched this whole thing and I thought, that you, lady, give our industry a bad name. That's why people have a funny relationship with aviation. They have this gate dragon, right, who's literally unleashed to go find the people with bags, and literally that's her job, right? She's walking around and she was so awful, okay? And she's looking and she's going, you to a random American lady, brings a bag to the the size checker. I don't know, I forgot what they call these things. Yeah. So she's
the
putting
sizer.
It in. Yeah. She's put it in. And of course it requires a bit of a push, right? Because the suitcase naturally has air in it as well, you know, that makes it. So because she's having to push, no, it doesn't fit. You have to take out your things. Take it out here, please.
Mm-hmm.
She said, it does fit. It's in now. No, you had to push it. So she was like, but she was like, take it out here. So this poor woman in front of everyone had to unzip her case, take out a cardigan that was on top, zip up her case again and put it in. She still had to squeeze it a little bit. She said, okay, now it's okay. You can take it on. I thought, oh my God.
Yeah, some people just.
It fit. What are you doing? Seriously. Yeah.
Some people just take out their frustration with life in their
jobs. Seriously, I watched that and I thought, oh, she's the reason why she walks off and says she doesn't like Swiss, for example. Yeah. Doesn't like, you know.
And I had a similar, are you done with your, do you have any other stories? Because I have a similar thing.
No, everything, thankfully, everything was all right. It was a very smooth connection. It's just those things that we notice, isn't it? It was super smooth. It was only a 50-minute flight and I slept for 49 minutes of it and woke up to the landing gear touching, you know, the touchdown and jumped out my skin. But it was fine. It was fine.
I was also thinking of you the other day. I was in Copenhagen over the weekend with some friends. I was flying to Gothenburg from Copenhagen. I decided not to take the train or bus back because it just takes too long. It was Mother's Day on Sunday, so my mom wanted me to be home early. So I go to Copenhagen Airport. They have 12 security stations, and just two of them have the new scanners, you know, where you don't have to take anything out. So obviously I was eyeing the different lines and I was like, okay, these two are where I'm going. And that's ironically, fast track didn't have it, but these two normal lines did. So I thought,
just pause on that moment. Can I just say one thing I noticed? Maybe you knew this. Do you know in Zurich they don't even have the scanners where, you know, where four people can do it in parallel and you queue behind each other? They still have the one long queue for one person to go up and empty his life into the trays. At least Stansted have figured out how to get beyond that.
Yeah, welcome to the dark side of, let's not hate on Zurich Airport too much. No. But anyway, so they have these two scanners and I think, perfect, I'll go to one of those lines. I know how to use it, but it's still a new thing for many people. And obviously, even most of Copenhagen Airport doesn't have those scanners. So there are signs that say, like, you can leave everything in your bag. It's early in the morning. It's like 6:30 a.m. And there's a woman in front or at the station next to me, because as you said, there's like three in a row where you unload your stuff.
You're all doing it in parallel, yeah.
Yeah, and she goes, sorry, do I need to take out my laptop? And he goes, leave everything in the bag. And she goes, oh, even the laptop? Leave everything in the bag.
What is wrong with them? Yeah. Seriously.
And she goes, oh, I've never seen this before. And he says, yes, I said leave everything in the bag. And I'm just like, what's wrong with being...
Were you standing next to her?
Yeah.
Were you not tempted to open your mouth?
No, because you don't want to get in a fight with someone in security.
I mean to her. Were you not tempted to say to her like, hey, the new machines, yeah, you can leave everything.
Yeah.
You know, even your laptop.
No, to be honest, I didn't want to, it was early. I didn't want to get involved. And then, you know, this is what kind of was very fascinating to me, because to me, I'm like, that's unacceptable behavior. But the reason it works so often, like in the US, I'm surprised that security can get away with being so rude, I guess, because it is security and people don't want to put up a fight. But in Europe, like her response to him being so rude was just, oh, I'm so sorry. It's an early morning.
She apologizes. After all,
she apologizes. Like, sorry, I'm stupid. True. And I'm just like, this is so crazy, because he could have literally just said, yeah, I know we have. Yeah, I know it's confusing. We have these new state-of-the-art scanners, so you can leave everything in.
Also, it's such a positive thing. It's mad that they wouldn't want to leverage that into some form of niceness.
Yeah, you know, just like, and acknowledge that I know this is unusual and you're usually right. You need to take stuff out. But no, he was just like,
security really is definitely, you know, if airports want to figure out, they sit there around boardrooms, don't they? With all their stakeholders and shareholders, figure out how do we make the passenger experience better? Most of it just stems around security, and it's not the inconvenience of security, because everyone gets that now. There's nobody that questions why we have to, you know, go through security in the way that we do. It's just the way that it's conducted in terms of the relationship between that individual and the passenger and treating everyone as if they're an idiot. Everyone, like a blanket, you're all idiots approach to all of it. And even, as you say, even yesterday, you know, the queue is, so it's queuing. You can't do it simultaneously. You can't do it in parallel. So each person, you're waiting for each person to go to the front, undo their things, put it, and he's saying, put your jacket here, put this there. So you kind of, you're patiently waiting. So I'm always ready. Like, I've got the laptop already in my arm. I've got my belt off. I've got the bags in the liquid so that I put in and we move forward. And so I put my laptop in the first one and the iPad next to it. And of course he wants them in separate, even though they both fit. Like, yeah. Seriously, some European airports, I leave the laptop in the laptop sleeve in the tray. Others, I'm now able to leave everything in the bag, you know, but here, okay, separately, the iPad and the laptop, despite them both fitting. So all in silence, without speaking, he takes another tray and starts rearranging the stuff, moving it. So I'm watching. And then as he's rearranged it, whoosh, he pushes them to go through. And I'm like, sorry, excuse me. No. Bring them back. I didn't tell you. And I'm not done.
Yeah.
Again, we've spoken about it before. What area of society are your belongings handled so poorly and with such that they're owned by the other side now?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
What's that? I couldn't imagine. It's like me going to a coffee shop, there being, you know, a chair with a jacket on, but on an empty table, and me just being super aggressive and taking almost ownership of someone else's jacket. You'd be looked at as a monster, quite rightly so. But yet in this scenario, where everything is transactional and whatever, bam, and also, I've said this before, with such speed, he did it. When the Mac falls out of the tray, because it's a thin tray and you've just pushed it with such speed and is on the ground in pieces, then what?
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to know.
Whose responsibility is that?
Because I didn't do it and I also didn't tell you to push it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But I think what you're saying, like, there's also such an inconsistency. You never know, what am I supposed to do? Like, yes, sometimes, you know, you're supposed to leave it in, but taking it out of a sleeve, for example, or putting your laptop in its own tray. And another thing, every single time I ask, do you want me to take my watch off? Because sometimes they're like, no, keep it on. Sometimes I have to take it off. There's no like logical reason when it's like, I have to keep it on or off. But
you should take it off, just because I just think you're just more likely to bleep as you go through.
Yeah, but every single time...
Sorry. that was my watch.
No way. But yeah, every single time I ask, or not every single time, but most times, the response is always like, yes, you need to take it off. And the attitude is like, are you stupid? Of course you need to...
I told you, it's an idiot approach to everyone. Like, everyone's an idiot.
Or like, of course you keep it on, of course. And I'm just like, how, even we are such frequent travelers, we don't know. Like, why are you talking like this? Anyway.
I know. The security thing, it is completely, I mean, I just hate the way that they try to, even at Heathrow, putting into the big, because they've got the big trays at Heathrow, haven't they? The big, deep, disgustingly filthy, sticky grey trays, right? That put the stuff in. And as I'm putting, for example, the laptop in, see at Heathrow, I know I can put the laptop in with the liquids because the tray's so big that it's fine. They don't touch, they don't cross over and whatever, and they're far away from each other in the tray. And so as I'm doing it, he puts his arm forward and shoo, pulls it towards him as if he's going to put it. So then I put my arms back on the tray and say, sorry, I'm not done, and push it back. Again, pull it back, sorry. It's early here. I don't see why it's acceptable, and that's why I do think it's worthy of conversation, because there are ways in which these things can be done too. And I always go back to thinking, you know, we are strong enough in terms of our confidence in being frequent flyers to be able to recognize, nope, not like that. Nope, I'm not going to. I know what I'm doing with this or whatever. And I'm thinking of, for example, the 80-year-old plus travelers. I'm thinking about my grandmother who still travels, bless her. I'm thinking about, you know, it's just not pleasant. And that gives aviation a bad rep when we see so much of this and there is so much inconsistency. I guess most of these issues can be fixed by just installing these bloody scanners that we don't have to take anything out. And then that really does, you know, solve much of the issue.
Exactly.
As I experienced in Rome a week ago.
Nice. So speaking of unpleasant I last week we didn't have time to just quickly go over my crazy experience of trying to do something as simple as getting from London to Gothenburg, where there are 3 or 4 daily direct flights on British Airways. But I just want to quickly summarize that because it will get us to an interesting lesson for everyone, because I already heard back from British Airways regarding feedback. So
good.
Basically, I was supposed to take a 8-9 a.m. direct flight from Heathrow to Gothenburg to visit my family for a few weeks. But I was supposed to drive to Norway that afternoon. So it was all like flying into Gothenburg, picking up a rental car, driving to Norway immediately, and then coming back down a few days later. So,
and how far would that drive have been from Gothenburg to where you were going?
3.5 hours.
So quite a long day ahead you had.
Yeah, and we were also coming from Asia, so the time zones weren't working in our favor in that sense. So we get to check-in. We stayed at Terminal 2, Hilton Garden Inn, walked to Terminal 3, underground. Literally, as we get to check-in in Terminal 3, the agent, it was actually kind of funny because I was like, does she know you? Because she went, where are you flying today? Like, really nice. I went, Gothenburg. She was like, her face was like a kind of poor you face. And she made a very distinct poor you face.
Gothenburg is Terminal 3.
Yes, which is great in terms of lounge access. I prefer flying from there. And
sure.
I would much rather go to the Cathay lounge than any lounge in T5, personally. But
listen, the lounges are better, yeah. But if you're not in a lounge and you're in Terminal 3, well, enjoy no windows.
Yeah, that's very true. So I literally told her, because she made such like a disgusted kind of face. I was like,
I know.
I'm not super thrilled about flying to Gothenburg either. She was like, oh no, it's not that. They literally just canceled your flight 1 minute ago. And I was like, oh great. Because I was...
No, you were not like, oh great. You were like, Alex.
Yeah. I was like, Alex, where are... then I'm like, okay, this will be interesting. Because, you know, like, I'm sure you are the same, that when you wake up before a morning flight, you go to check the flight status. You check, what is the aircraft? Where is it coming from? All that stuff. Does everything look good? And it literally all looked fine when I checked 15 minutes earlier. I get to the check-in desk.
What time did you arrive to check in?
So the flight, I think, was 8:50 or something, and I arrived to check in about 7:15.
Because do you remember I told you that I always check before the BA morning flight? Because you didn't know this, did you, about when they do the first cancellations of the day? It's the decision taken in the BA morning meeting. Operationally, the morning meeting happens really early, somewhere between 4 and 5. And I'm sure one of the listeners can give some insight in case you're part of this meeting. But from what I know, a meeting takes place at BA between 4 and 5 in the morning, where they look at the day ahead and they can see operationally what they are able to meet in terms of the schedule that they plan to operate. And the limitations, for example, aircraft in the wrong place, delays, weather, strike action, blah, blah, blah. And at that point in the morning, just before the first wave of flights, they take a decision to make the necessary cancellations to ensure that they are able to deliver the schedule of the day. And typically those destinations will be those with multiple frequencies, such as Geneva, Madrid, Zurich, and so on. So if you are flying BA, for example, in the morning and you go to the departures board, you'll usually see 3 or 4 cancellations. It's typically a destination, as I said, with multiple frequencies. And that's a decision taken in the early morning, pre-6 a.m. So that's why I think it's always important to check.
But that's why it was interesting that mine wasn't canceled until late. And the thing is, if I had known, we could have stayed in our hotel. I wanted to work out. We could have slept longer. Like, there were so many things we could have done if I had known exactly when we woke up. But instead, we found out at the check-in desk. So then I'm frantically checking on Google Flights, what is available. And literally, there weren't even that many. I would say there were like 5 cancellations that morning, in line with what you're saying is the norm. But flights are just being like, literally, as I'm refreshing Google Flights, flights are disappearing because they're going from 2 seats to 0. So I'm just like, oh my God, I was checking Air France. Nope, that suddenly sold out. KLM suddenly sold out. Finnair on the A350. So then I'm like, this is perfect. Let's do that. It's Terminal 3. It's all good. It leaves in 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go on Flight Radar. Thank God. Oh shit, flight is delayed 2 hours coming in from Helsinki. So we're going to miss our connection.
Oof.
So the only option, which my blood was just like, my body was crawling, do not get rebooked on this, but the only available option that would get us into Gothenburg before the next direct BA flight, which wouldn't get in until 7 p.m., was SAS and SAS Plus, which is by far the worst intra-European business class. And the bar is already low, but here...
And you were flying BA business, right?
BA Club Europe.
So you were flying
Europe.
BA business, BA Club Europe, and with the help of British Airways cancelling on your walk from the hotel to the check-in, you were suddenly facing the prospect of flying what you just described as the worst way to get to...
What is this music you're trying to put on in the background?
I think it was just a...
Oh yeah, there we go.
Welcome to SAS Plus, Daniel Goss.
What I would have done to hear this music on that day. So
that is a banger.
The reason it's so bad, we should mention, is that the only... Like, I am fine paying extra for Club Europe because it's such a small premium with Avios that
because
I'm like...
Because you are an extra.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, it's worth it to get an empty middle seat and, you know, a little bit of food and just this stuff for like $50 food. Extra on a 2-hour flight. But when I book that, what I don't want is to end up on an airline that doesn't even block middle seats in what they call intra-European business. There's no headrest.
So what's the difference on board?
So the difference on board is, first of all, you get those Lufthansa-style ironing board seats. And Oscar and I both end up in middle seats. So instead of having an aisle and a window.
SAS Business put business class passengers in a middle seat.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a blocked middle seat on SAS.
With passengers on either side of you.
Yes. So Oscar and I.
What's the difference between their economy and their plus then?
You get airport priority, you get a lounge, you get a small meal on board. Yeah, you get a small meal, but it's like the most important thing is a blocked middle seat. So,
of course.
Anyway, so we get rebooked on SAS. We walk back to Terminal 2. We're checking in, and I think they use Swissport SAS at Terminal 2. The staff was also, I'm not going to go into the whole story, but they were so rude. And on both flights, so London, Copenhagen, we had middle seats. And the thing was, on Copenhagen, Gothenburg, they put us in middle seats, even though there were window and aisle seats available. So I asked the agent, are you able to just help me switch seats on the second flight? No. Sorry, why is that? Can you just not change the seats? No, we're not allowed. Okay, but are you sure there's no way? No. So, all right, we get those. Luckily, I figure out I can do it in the SAS app, even though like the ticket was converted to an SAS PNR. I could manage the seats on the second flight. So then, as our bags have just left, you know, they go down on the conveyor belt into the luggage hold at Terminal 2. We walk towards security. I go on Flight Radar and I realize, oh my God, our aircraft hasn't even left Copenhagen yet. And we have a 1-hour connection and it's already 1.5 hours behind the scheduled departure.
So you originally turned up for a BA business class flight, London to Gothenburg.
Yes.
You are rerouted or rerouted, if you're American, you're rerouted via London, Copenhagen, Gothenburg. And now London, Copenhagen is set to be delayed because your aircraft hasn't even left where it's coming from, meaning that your connection, which is only 60 minutes, is now at risk.
Exactly.
What a mess.
So,
okay.
So we were supposed to get into Gothenburg on BA at 11:40 a.m. This new SAS flight via Copenhagen should get us in at 2:50 p.m. So So then we sit down at Cafe Nero outside security in Terminal 2 just to see, because the flight literally had not even pushed back. So we were like...
Oh, they don't clean their tables there.
I know. But we were like, this
honestly,
could end up
what
being...
is that? Yeah.
I will say they had a delicious pistachio latte, but that's besides the point.
Well, just don't put it down on the table then, you'll be fine.
So we're like, this flight could end up being canceled or delayed God knows how long. So let's not go through security. So upset we handed our bags in because we know that could end up being a nightmare. Thankfully, like 15 minutes later, our aircraft takes off, estimated to land just over an hour behind schedule. So, with all that, we shouldn't miss our connection. Yeah. We go through security. Instead of my glamorous plan of having a delicious breakfast of noodles and fresh dumplings in the Cathay Pacific Lounge in Terminal 3, we're condemned to the Lufthansa Lounge in Terminal 2 because I'm not going to walk over
the Lufthansa waiting room. Now, see, if I were you, and you know how I can sprint, just but stay walking, don't look like a lunatic rushing, for a late flight. But
yeah,
I would never have needed Singapore Airlines' hospitality more than in that moment.
Well,
I would have
sprinted
down that walkway to T2B and presented myself to the Singapore Lounge and said, embrace me with some Southeast Asian hospitality.
So first of all, you would have been very disappointed if you walked all the way there because the Singapore Airlines Lounge is currently closed in Terminal 2 for several months. And
what?
Yeah. And that.
Oh, my God. I'm glad you told me.
Yeah. But that distance is so far. I know. Every time I do it, I'm like, this never ends. So.
Do you know the original plan was to have a monorail, to have the train to connect. And then, of course, cost cutting. They just thought it's OK. These people can walk.
It is like it takes at least 10 minutes walking at a normal pace to. To what, so
it does,
I was like,
but I for me, it feels shorter now because of the walks that I used to have to do from T5C when Qatar were in T5C during the pandemic. Oh, my God.
Well, anyway, we enjoyed the Lufthansa Lounge. Get on our flight, middle seats, love it. Fly to Copenhagen.
Do you not get paranoid in that moment that you're going to see like a listener or a viewer and they're looking at you like,
why is Dan in a...
Yeah, this is not how you present yourself online.
I know, I did have that thought. I did also, both Oscar and I put on masks because we were like...
Shut up.
We were surrounded, not for privacy, but we were surrounded on all sides. And I was we're both squeezed into middle seats. We had like 5 hours of sleep last night.
Yeah.
I'm not going to risk it. So we were wearing masks, which I don't know if that made us less recognizable, but I mean, honestly, that's not my biggest concern. We fly up to Copenhagen, land with 20 minutes until our next flight. So I'm thinking we could make it if we run. Copenhagen Airport isn't that big. We can do this. So as we're that's my thought as we touch down. As we taxi and I connect to mobile data, I realize, great, SAS has already rerouted us via Stockholm. So
no, hold on. No. Hold on. You originally booked to go from London to Gothenburg. You're rerouted onto a delayed London to Copenhagen, and you've now missed your connection to Gothenburg. And instead of putting you onto another Gothenburg flight, instead of sending you to Gothenburg, they want to send you now from Copenhagen to Stockholm.
Yep, that's exactly what happened.
This is a Eurovision tour or what?
I know, but that's not all. Fine to send us to Stockholm if the flight leaves soon. The flight leaves in 6 hours to Stockholm.
Oh my God.
Gets us into Stockholm at 8 p.m. Our connection to Gothenburg then leaves at 9:30 and gets into Gothenburg at 10:30 p.m. Keep in mind, we're planning on driving to Norway. We're jet lagged. Yeah, so at that point, we're just like, you know what? We're done with flying for today. We've had enough. as much as I want to sit in two more SAS Plus middle seats on an A320,
yeah, right.
I think I'll just take the train. So we head to the SAS support desk and we tell them, hi, we're in the home of Greta Thunberg. Can you possibly rebook us on a train? Yeah, no,
now,
that's
this
not
is gonna... really interesting because before you even explain what they had said, in aviation, for example, remember I told you I hosted that conference a few weeks ago, the discussions, they all boast about how there's these amazing, sustainable new partnerships being signed left and right between flight airline operators and train operators. And so the airline operators and the train companies are coming together in a solidarity to take on the issue of climate change, and one can go from one flight to a train when the train is the alternative and it's far more sustainable and blah, 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 blah. And in reality, the reason I'm saying blah, blah, blah is because in reality, it doesn't really work, or airlines are not as proactively offering that. I mean, maybe it's the, you know, you can get it as a search option when you book on, for example, Lufthansa, but they're definitely showing you it on the sixth page, and it's definitely not an ideal connection with a layover of 16 hours because apparently that's what you wanted. So when you told me on the phone that, okay, you are now about to approach the desk in the land of Greta herself and say, hey, this is a nightmare. I'm trying to get from here to here. Instead of rebooking me on just your next available thing via wherever.
Stockholm, which is extremely wasteful.
Extremely wasteful. And you're, you know, the emissions that you are just, I mean, you're just on a little European pollution tour, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just running around pointlessly. So rebook me, given that there is train transport links. What happens?
So, yeah, I go up to the agent. I tell him, here's the train I want to take. Can you rebook me? Yeah, no, SAS never rebooks to trains. We don't have any train partnerships. I go, what? He goes, yeah, I might be able to get you your bags and you can just book the train yourself. And I go, okay, so will SAS pay the train? They might. You can try, you know, submitting for reimbursement, but can't promise anything. So I just go, I don't even care. The train is $70 per person. Yes, sucks to spend that for no reason, especially when I paid for business class, ended up in a middle seat to Copenhagen, and now have to take a 4-hour train, but it will still get us in 4 hours earlier than the whole SAS via Stockholm thing.
Do you see how he uses our podcast, ladies and gentlemen, as like therapy for him, you know, to, you know, this was not the purpose of On Air when we launched, but somehow he does this every few episodes. I can only apologize. Anyway, continue, Dan.
Yeah, it's just my bad luck. And I just have to say, the irony is, you know, last year I was just talking so much shit about Heathrow, about British Airways, like keep getting screwed over. And this year I've had good luck besides getting A10 every time. But now it starts again. A canceled flight, and here we are. So take the train, awful experience. And by the way, this train company that I took, Öresundstog, I booked first class because I was like, you know, we need just, which was $70. We just need some comfort. And they don't even guarantee seats.
When you're booking first class, you're like, you know what? I need cucumber slices on my eyes.
Yeah. Right? Okay. That's not what you get in Scandinavia. So we get on. I'm like, where are the seats? The train agent is like, oh yeah, if there's no seats, you just have to stand. I'm like, for 4 hours with all our luggage? Yeah, yeah. Not like, I'm sorry. Just like, yeah, that's what it's like. So
did you cry?
I would have cried if I had not found seats at that point, but I did.
Right. Okay.
I did find two seats that we could sit in, and the train ride, it was fine. 4 hours though, get into Gothenburg, to the train station, not the airport, and I called my mom. I was like, Mom, help! We need to get to Gothenburg Airport to pick up our rental car, and I'm not taking another bus for 40 minutes to get there. So,
oh God, we shouldn't be laughing, but
I know. So then, thankfully, my mom picks us up, drives us to the airport. We pick up our rental car. We scrap our plans of driving to Norway that evening. Sleep in my mom's house, and then the next morning at 6 a.m. we drive up to Norway.
You take the next morning at 6 a.m. you take British Airways to Gold.
Yeah. So a few days later, I submit obviously claims to both British Airways and to SAS to see what do you have to say for yourself. So to BA, because I got a lot of interesting DMs about this and what I should do from people who have actually been in similar situations. So the different things I asked for. First of all, they said BA and SAS were claiming the delays slash cancellations were due to weather at Heathrow. And Heathrow does do this. They limit the number of movements you can have because when there's some fog or it was just slightly foggy that morning, they have to space out arrivals a bit more. So let's see. So to British Airways, I submitted, first of all, I said, I want EU261 or UK261 compensation because all your other flights, 95% of your flights were departing that morning. So how can you claim weather? Then I said, I want to have the Avios difference between economy and Club Europe, because I ended up in a middle seat when I paid for business. And many viewers were actually DMing and saying I should do this. The last thing I claimed was for the train, which isn't their fault, but I still claimed for it. So from SAS, I claimed the train and EU261 to see how that would go.
Okay.
I haven't heard back from SAS.
No surprise.
British Airways, impressively, and we've said this before, they're very impressive with how fast they respond and how thoroughly they respond.
Yeah. And they do. You are not talking to a robot. You are talking to somebody that has actively, forensically looked at, you know, yeah. I mean, they look at it forensically because they also try to get out of it, of course, from that side. That's their motive. But I have always found them to be very fair in these scenarios.
Yeah. So here's their response. I'm just going to read the email. Your claim has been refused because BA...
I love how you let me set it up. I really thought that we were about to say something positive, especially when you agreed with me when I said very fair. Hold on. I think if you can read it out at the same time as so okay. Your claim has been refused.
Your claim has been refused because BA 690 was cancelled due to air traffic control reductions in capacity at London Heathrow because of weather. Low visibility and fog can severely impact our operation at London Heathrow. When visibility is low, the spacing between arriving aircraft has to be increased, which results in air traffic control imposing restrictions on the amount of flights that can arrive at London Heathrow. When air traffic control imposes restrictions on the amount of flights that can arrive, departures are also affected, which results in delays and cancellations. This cancellation was out of our control and caused unforeseen disruption to our schedule. Period. That's it. Then, new paragraph. We are sorry to hear that you weren't able to travel in the same cabin on your alternate flight. That's not exactly what I told them. I told them just that SAS Plus is technically premium economy, not business.
Yeah.
So she said, I've requested a refund for your downgraded travel, which will be assessed by our refunds team. So I'm curious how that will play out.
No guarantees.
Yeah. Then she says any refund would be paid to your original form of payment. So let's see. Lastly, the good news. Thank you for sending us the receipt for your train expenses. We are happy to reimburse you with $224.46.
Oh, good.
And I've initiated a bank transfer for this amount. So at least I got something.
Hooray.
But
I think you should take that. I think that's not bad. The UK does get that kind of little bit of early morning fog, and the National Air Traffic Bureau in the UK, which is, did I just say the US gets fog?
No, I think you said the UK. I think you did.
Okay. Anyway, because I was thinking of NATS, the acronym for NATS, which is basically the air traffic service provider in the UK. And they are the ones responsible for spacing out arrivals. And that, you know, they do control the flows and they do adapt the flows to the different different weather patterns that the UK experiences at different times of the day. But as I say, it is common in the morning. You know this anyway about how they space out arrivals. And spacing out arrivals sometimes means they have to take a few flights out of the schedule in order to, you know, to cope with the fact that there is greater distance between each arriving aircraft or each departing aircraft. So, of course, what they've told you is true. It's just unlucky and frustrating that impacted, you know, Gothenburg rather than the New York flight of that morning or the Malaga or the whatever.
Yeah. I just feel like it is kind of, to me, not a legit excuse when that you just cancel a few flights, but everything else can operate? Because then, is that truly severe weather that
But did actually, they claim it was severe weather?
No, but it, no. it warrants, you know, weather that warrants a cancellation. The true yeah. thing at fault here is Heathrow's slot constraints. But that's not Heathrow's, you know, that's in that case, Heathrow fault. Should be paying yeah. me compensation because it's not the weather, well, like a storm that's causing all flights needing to be delayed or cancelled.
If you wanted to take this to court, which I advise you not to, but let's say, for example, you in a weird world, you wanted to properly take this to court and assess every single, you know, avenue in terms of understanding who is in the right or wrong here. You are right, because British Airways publish and sell a schedule that they know if a little bit of spacing is required in the flows that Heathrow control, then they're going to have to cancel. And how that is the fault of the consumer is very unclear. Similarly, Heathrow know that they operate a highly ambitious schedules in terms of the arriving traffic and the flows in and out of Heathrow, that even the slightest bit of, for example, fog or reduced visibility requires them to increase the spacing that they wouldn't have to do if it was not so ambitious, if it was not so tightly packed, and if the airport was not so a slot constraint. And so again, they are acting in a way to maximize the flows while knowing that a tiny bit of reduced visibility requires additional spacing between aircraft, which then is passed down to BA to say, you are unable to operate X number of flights today, but you need to reduce by 5. Then BA reduces by 5 and then comes to you, the consumer, and says to you, well, you know, it's bad weather this morning. And it's a bit, well, that's not 100% the full yeah. picture. It's not even half of the picture.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my experience and the current situation. Obviously, it sucked, but it could have been, I don't know how it could have been worse, but I think it could have been worse. So
what a day. I mean, at least you got there in the end, thankfully, yeah. and all is fine and you're with your staff and we count the blessings that way. But yeah, that for what, wow, I wasn't expecting that story for what should have just been a very simple London Gothenburg flight.
Yeah, like literally
point A, point B. That's it. Like you weren't even connecting. You were starting the journey from London.
Like literally a 1 hour and 30 minute flight turned into a 14 hour travel day to get to Gothenburg. So that was fun. We've spoken for so long. There's just a few news stories that we really need to discuss that are quite interesting. And the first, this is not really exciting news, but I think we need to discuss it, especially now that we've had an episode of talking about European aviation. The Lufthansa has announced they will be trialing serving coffee and tea in short-haul economy this summer, only as a trial, because suddenly Lufthansa executives have noticed in recent years their customer satisfaction scores have become dreadful. So this has been, you know, many years in the works as Lufthansa has stripped back service in different ways. And suddenly now they think, oh, better introduce free coffee and tea to reverse that trend. Will this work?
I for one am fully on board with it. I think this is the answer. This is how we get customer satisfaction levels back up at Lufthansa. I don't know why you would take the pee. I think they've cracked the code, Dan. The trial of tea and coffee that will be trialed across select routes, I think is absolutely the answer to all of Lufthansa's problems. And I stand behind the airline fully in this regard.
I agree. It's not, you know, making people who have booked economy class pay extra check-in if they want to change seats or sit next to a loved one. It's not having ironing board seats with no leg room across their fleet. It's not having a business class that is way past its prime on 98% of their long haul fleet. It's just the coffee and tea that's missing.
Yeah, it's that. And I think this will fix everything. I think this will lead Lufthansa to unlock the sixth star from Skytrax this year. You know, you heard it here first on air, and we do get our predictions correct. So I think this is a wonderful move. What else did we have happening in the industry?
Well, we have had another quote-unquote turbulence incident that
Yeah, this is actually serious. This is unfortunate. Actually, there's been two.
Two more?
So there's been one involving Qatar Airways and one involving Turkish Airlines.
When was the Turkish Airlines one?
Also a few days ago. I'll bring it up. The we spoke extensively in last week's episode about flying and turbulence and about the risk that turbulence has always posed to passengers. And of course, this came off the back of that really unusual, really rare freak incident that occurred on a Singapore Airlines 777 that was flying over the Bay of Bengal. Passengers were alerted to fasten their seatbelts, and a few seconds later, this aircraft passed through an area of the severe end of severe in terms of the spectrum of turbulence. And there were dozens and dozens of injuries. Sadly, a gentleman lost his life. And it was just a really unusual freak, you know, thankfully rare occurrence. What we have seen is that in the past 2 days, this doesn't suggest that something's going on, you know, in the skies right now. I do think this is still coincidence, but in the past couple of days, you've had a Qatar Airways 787 that was on its way to Dublin encounter turbulence over Turkey, and it was just for a couple of seconds, and it led to some minor injuries. Passengers said that those that didn't have their seatbelts on were a little bruised, and also some minor injuries with the crew who were doing the meal service at the time. Nothing like the Singapore incident, but still, of course, deeply unpleasant for those that were on board, and of course, some passengers, a few of them, and a few crew sustaining minor injuries is just not good news for anyone. And on a far more kind of severe and unusual occurrence, on a domestic flight, Turkish Airlines, from between Istanbul and Izmir, they encountered on this 40-minute flight severe turbulence that threw one member of the cabin crew to the ceiling of the aircraft, and she suffered a severe spinal injury. I believe they said she's broken her back. It's just horrendous. And again, rare, unusual, and a bit weird that we're even speaking about this a week after the Singapore incident, when actually, had the Singapore thing had not happened, this would have been the unusual occurrence of the industry of this week. So
yeah,
it is, of course, unsettling and unnerving, but I don't want this to unnerve passengers, listeners, you know, yourselves listening, because it is still incredibly rare.
Yeah.
And the best advice is to, you know, have your seatbelts fastened as much as you can, even if loosely, because that is the device that is going to be the difference as to whether or not, you know, you are protected in that scenario or not. And of course, that's really awful for the crew, because the crew don't have such luxury as to be able to be seated for the entire flight. They are relying on the flight deck to give instruction as to when to sit. So yeah, it's all a little bit unpleasant, isn't it?
Yeah. And that brings us to news from Singapore Airlines. They're the only airline to announce this, but now, from now on, we'll get into discussion about this, but basically there will be no in-flight service whatsoever when the seatbelt sign is on Singapore Airlines. So theoretically, on a flight from Singapore to Bangkok, which is 2 hours, if the seatbelt sign is on the whole time, even if it's quite smooth, but they suspect there could be chop, there will be no in-flight service, no meals, no drinks in any cabin. So this raises the questions. Singapore Airlines is one of the best airlines in the world. They're known for their great in-flight service. I personally don't see this policy sticking around for long after the whole, you know, hype around this incident fades. But I think it's more a reaction to calm people and calm the crews down. But it is an interesting move of them to make. What do you think? Could we see other airlines do this, or is this a very temporary thing?
I've spoken to many airlines. I've reached out to many to see if they're going to be adjusting or adapting their policies over the seatbelt sign in response to what has happened. Most have said no. Most have said that, look, they fly around the world, hundreds of flights every single day. They know about how, you know, to conduct the service and how to ultimately have your in-flight service cater to flights that could encounter turbulence. And that involves, you know, the seatbelt sign going on with light turbulence, and then also the crew being told to sit down. That's when the service gets suspended and so on and so on. So most, I don't think, are going to be switching. With Singapore now not going to be offering any service at all when the seatbelt sign is on, I just wonder if this changes the threshold as to when the seatbelt sign will now come on. Does that mean that they will continue through light turbulence? That is, you know, you're moving around quite a bit. So does that mean that the seatbelt sign will be left off, leaving someone to be able to go to the lavatory, for example, which potentially is far more unsafe than just being seated, but it's safe enough for the crew who know what they're doing and who know where to hold on to. And also, you know, they're not being thrown about by any means in that scenario. It's just light turbulence. So it's safe enough for them to do the service. Does that mean that that's what happens? Or does it mean now that turbulence begins in a light form, bing, the sign comes on, service is now suspended. Turbulence remains in that light form for the next hour and a half. So you've just flown the whole flight, if you were flying only an hour and a half flight. So yeah, how this is actually going to work in practice, time is going to tell over the next couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, it will be interesting. We had some messages last week about people saying one thing we didn't mention, which I agree, of course, we should add to this discussion, is that severe turbulence is more common and will get even more common due to climate change.
Yeah,
so
unfortunately,
it will be interesting for the industry going forward. You know, the more the climate changes, how will airlines and aircraft manufacturers adapt? Will we? I just had like a crazy image in my head of flight attendants being like strapped to the floor on like a, you know, like those harnesses you get if you're like abseiling or something. So when you walk through the cabin, you're constantly connected to the floor as you walk so that you can't fly into the ceiling. I don't know. Like, obviously, I don't think we're going to see that, but it is, who knows what's going to happen. I hope that doesn't get too much worse over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move into some Q&A.
Okay, I have a question here from a YouTube commenter. I can't find the name, but he asks, what is Alex's background that he'd be flying on private jets?
Background? What? I don't know how that's linked to a few. And by the way, I don't actively fly around the world on private jets. Goodness me, I wish. No, but I have flown private jets quite a few times. And usually it's just work related. So sometimes it's to do with the manufacture of that private jet itself. Sometimes it's to do with positioning with a team somewhere. It completely depends.
Yeah, I think we should clarify here that you weren't flying private jets as a kid. This is a newer thing.
No, sorry. Also, as an adult, I've flown private jets, told you, less than 10 times.
Yeah.
Maybe seven or eight times.
Yeah, that's good. Jay Miller asks, can we describe what the curvature of the Earth looks like? I don't know if this is a joke, but the Earth is round, guys.
Yeah, it just looks like curvy.
With curvy.
Black above and then beautiful kind of deep blue ozone layer style pattern in between the black and the Earth. Maybe this person wants an invite. That's why.
Yeah. Okay. I have another question here from Aiden. He says, hi, Dan and Alex. Love the podcast.
Hi, Aiden.
If you could only fly one airline for the rest of your life, which would you choose?
Oh, for God's sake. Well, you were about to say Singapore, but then you realized there'd be no service.
That is actually quite true. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's tough because you have to think about like where the different, which airline can take you to the most places.
So your answer is Turkish Airlines?
Possibly, because they could take me to almost anywhere as opposed to, cool. What do you think?
Well, enjoy your long walks at the Istanbul hub. Your gate is 35 minutes away by walk. Have a nice flight.
But at least it's nice. What? It looks nice along the way.
It does look nice along the way. Joshua Hello. Asks,
Are you going to answer the question?
Oh, I thought the question was for you.
It was for Alex and Dan.
Oh, I think they're only asking the guest of the podcast.
Yeah.
One airline for the rest. I want to think of something. Do, 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 do. No. it's too difficult. Come I don't know. On. There are so many great ones, of course. I'm trying to think of a cleverer answer to
Ryanair.
How this could be. No, for example, like Airbus have a shuttle or like, you know, or the private jet division. I think I would fly Vista Jet for the rest of my NetJets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Speaking of someone who didn't grow up on private jets.
Yeah, unlike you.
Who has never flown one.
Joshua asks, "Hi, Alex. I really enjoy the podcast. I patiently wait for its release every week. I thought what you said about the Singapore Airlines incident only being newsworthy because it's so rare really put things into perspective. I have a question. My dad's cutlery drawer at home is full of airline cutlery, mostly Etihad from when they used to give you proper cutlery in economy."
Oh, that's why they stopped.
Yeah, Josh, it was your dad. Right. "Do either of you to collect stuff from flights? What do you think about people doing this? Is it par for the course or should people not do this? Cheers, Josh." What do you collect, line cutter Dan?
No way, Jose.
Are you also safety card thief, Dan?
No.
Do you have anything you'd like to declare on this week's episode?
I have stolen a couple safety cards from, like, I took one of the last flights on KLM's MD-11. I stole that one.
Yeah.
Dan,
I'm on a call. Hi. Yeah.
KLM.
The jurisdiction should be the Amsterdam area. Yeah. Yeah. The police report should be done online.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's
cool.
Those final flights, if I've been on like a final flight of something, that's the only time I've taken anything. Okay, let me think. Of course, amenity kits and pajamas. Virgin Atlantic encourages you to nick their cute little salt and pepper shakers.
Yeah.
That are look like airplanes. That's all. I've never taken any. Oh my God. One. Okay. Arrest me. I really don't steal stuff from planes. I do fly a lot, but in 2018, I stole a United Polaris Saks Fifth Avenue blanket because we needed a blanket in our university apartment. So
I like it.
What about you?
I loved the pattern on this wasn't oh god we should do an episode dedicated to confession, right?
Yeah.
So in 2017 I was flying Air Astana back from Kazakhstan and I really liked the pattern of the cushion in business class, not just the pillow but kind of the cushion, the decorative cushion, and at the time it matched one of the guest rooms at home, and so I thought, oh, this is coming home with me, but not the cushion, the pillowcase, right? So I start to look for where the zip is to unzip to take the pillowcase. And, you know, I was young. I wouldn't do this now, but anyway, I start to, and I realized that actually it's the cushion itself. There was no pillowcase at all. So I thought, oh God, you know, it's the cushion itself. All right, I'll have to take the cushion. So it went in my bag and I think that's, as you were talking, I was thinking, I think that's the only thing I've taken. Safety cards, I've taken a few on special flights, but like delivery flights or whatever. And I think typically it's known that they're going to go. And I think also I've asked as well if it's all right to have a souvenir one. I definitely do not recommend anyone going on a flight and removing the safety card as a souvenir because of tight turnarounds. You know, it's probably going to be missed by the cabin crew that there's a missing safety card. That doesn't actually comply to have a flight depart without everything in check in terms of the safety equipment. It doesn't comply with regulations. You're kind of indirectly or even directly putting someone at risk. So don't do that. Yeah. I mean, stick with like Dan and me, like the cushions, the blankets.
No. If you're ever like wondering, can I take something? You could ask the crew because, for example, sometimes in Q Suite or on Qatar Airways in general, you're actually kind of encouraged to take the small pillows as a souvenir with the little quotes on them. So if you ask the crew about that, they will say, yeah, take them. So I've taken a few of those, but the big pillow, they'll say no.
Suraj says, hi, Alex. Love listening to your podcast with Dan. I have a question about Heathrow. Are they using the optimum solution for air traffic control versus other hubs? He said he's currently sat on a domestic flight in Manchester waiting to depart, awaiting Heathrow controller go-ahead. Would love to hear the insights. Well, Suraj, by coincidence, we kind of chatted about this in this week's episode, didn't we, about the flows. And are they using the optimum? I would say that based on the fact that Heathrow operates at 99.9% capacity and there is literally no room. I mean, they're able to accept a diversion a day and that's it. They do things pretty well. They handle one of the most slot constrained airports in the world, if not the most slot constrained airport in the world. And of course, because of that, you do get residual delays as a result.
Yeah. I have a final question here from Kevin. He says, for me, the exterior cameras on airplanes are the best IFE, specifically watching the tail cam during takeoffs and landings. Do you know which airline introduced them to the public for the first time?
Oh.
We don't, but it was probably,
no.
I guess, Emirates or Singapore Airlines on the
A380. I think Emirates or Singapore. Well, I mean, Emirates, some of Emirates' older 777s have the front cam.
True. Yeah, that's
the
true.
The old grainy cam, and they've been about for ages. So
we'll get back to you on
we'll
this.
Find out. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll find out. Well, look, it's been a pleasure as always. And I hope that you being able to vent to us about what you had to go through somehow makes it all worth it, because, you know, in a weird way, we did enjoy it. At least I did. But at least you're where you need to be. Wishing you a wonderful rest of your week in Sweden and across Scandinavia, Dan.
Yeah, thank you. And enjoy AIX. Say hi to all the people I know.
I will do.
And wave to Lufthansa from us.
From afar. Definitely. Yeah. From afar.
Okay, we'll see you all next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later, guys.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.